In menopause, it's just the next phase of life. We become the wise woman, the elder of the community. We don't care as much what people think about us, so we get things done. Like, there are good things in there too, even though the transition can be rough. And yes, there's things we need to think about to protect our health as we move forward.
Yeah, I love it. I feel stronger than ever. I do, you know, I teach yoga. I'm a yoga therapist. I have a hip replacement that I had at 51. I'm on my BHRT now that I know for sure it's bioidentical. I'm taking my feminescence. I'm doing my lifestyle to support it. I love it. I love where I'm at. Yeah. And it's the best version of myself that I can be.
Welcome to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. I am Debbie Robinson, your host and guide on your Stronger Bones lifestyle journey.
My next guest is Dr. Mona Fahoum. She is a naturopathic physician and owner of Meridian Medicine in Seattle and Essential Wellness in Arlington, Washington. Dr. Mona, as she's referred to by her patients, focuses on preventative primary care, women's health, hormones, and digestive concerns. In addition to her doctorate in naturopathic medicine from Bastyr, Dr. Mona has her certification in the advanced use of bioidentical hormone replacement. Outside her primary care practice, she is also director of clinical services at the Bastyr Center for Natural Health and has been adjunct faculty at Bastyr University. Professionally, Dr. Mona is past president of her state organization, the Washington Association of Naturopathic Physicians, and a member of the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians. Dr. Mona supports continuing education, seminars, and regularly appears on podcasts, webinars, and interviews for women's groups, hormone support influencers, and others. As part of the medical team for Symphony Natural Health, makers of the Feminescence products, Dr. Mona consults extensively on women's health and hormones. In today's podcast with Dr. Mona Fahoum, we're speaking about a product line from Symphony, and the products that I'm recommending are products that I use myself. The reason I had her on is because I understand the value in supporting hormones as we age, and the value of supporting hormones, or the need for supporting hormones, for bone health. The product line uses natural products. And for those that are looking for natural approaches to healthy aging and to bone health, I like to look for what I believe to be the best products out there for this. So if you look below in the show notes, you'll see links out to some of the products that were spoken about in today's podcast and are recommended by Dr. Mona and by myself. And you can purchase these products, and there's a lot of scientific evidence behind the efficacy and the ability of them to increase our hormones naturally, which is beneficial for healthy aging and healthy bones. So look at the links below and let me know how it goes for you. Let me know if you have tried the products and what your thoughts are on these products. Welcome to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. Today we have Dr. Mona, who is going to speak about hormones and bones, and we are looking so forward to learning more about this topic. Welcome, Dr. Mona.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to it.
Yes. So let's jump right in and let's discuss hormones and their impact on bone health.
Sure. Yeah, there's a huge impact of our hormones on our bone health. As some of your listeners may know this, but some may not, in the first 3 to 5 years of menopause, women often lose 7 to 10% of their bone density. And there's only really one thing that's changed. Like, generally, in 3 to 5 years, you haven't really drastically changed your diet. Your stress levels haven't drastically changed. Your lifestyle is pretty much the same. But that lack of hormones as you enter menopause in those first few years of menopause give us a direct idea and correlation of what hormones have been doing for us that whole time. And so we always think about estrogen, as we should, because estrogen, there are estrogen receptors on osteoblasts, osteoclasts, and osteocytes. We don't need to get into all of those different cell types, but needless to say, all throughout the bone structure, we have estrogen receptors, and estrogen plays a role with their activity. For example, blasts, I always think of B for build, osteoblasts build bone. And estrogen turns up that activity. It turns up the maturation of those cells so that we're laying down new bone, repairing bone, doing all the stuff. But low estrogen actually increases inflammation. As a result of menopause, we end up with lowered estrogen, which increases inflammatory factors like IL-6 and TNF-alpha, all these things that we don't necessarily want to have around. ROS, so reactive oxygen species, which are oxidant and they cause damage. And without that estrogen around, that increased inflammation actually turns on osteoclast activity, which breaks down bone. So we no longer have our signal to turn up the production, and we've lost some of the control over the cells that actually break down the bone. What we don't always pay attention to, though, is testosterone and progesterone also stimulate bone, the blasts, the cells that differentiate and promote bone growth and bone repair. We have these other hormones that are there as well, along with DHEA, and those are coming from the ovaries as well, and also the adrenal glands. And so as that stuff turns down over the years and we're stressed out and our adrenals are not working like they used to, we start losing some of these basic things that actually help promote bone density.
Yeah, it's like, so the osteoblasts, the builders, and then I call the osteoclasts C, the cleanup crew, so the dissolvers. So
there
we're
you
building.
Go. Cut isn't the right word. What do I want to use for
cleanup?
For class? That's
the cleanup.
Lovely. They're the cleanup.
Which we need, right? We need, like, just yes. Like our skin, we need bone breakdown to create space for new, stronger, better quality bone to be laid down. So we have on and off switches. Are we building or dissolving, or building and cleaning up?
Exactly. And we need building and repair at a higher level than the cleanup crew.
Right. And lifestyle is going to have an factor mm-hmm. there. So that's the estrogen. What about the progesterone and the testosterone? Same thing.
Same kind of thing. I mean, progesterone also increases the blast activity. That's its primary job. It's not as potent as estrogen, but it's still a player in that mix. Testosterone, however, actually promotes blast activity as much as estrogen in some of the newer stuff that's coming out. So in women's health, we've just like blown by testosterone because it's not, I tell my patients this all the time, because it's not intimately related to the menstrual cycle, we've just completely ignored testosterone. So there's not a ton of research on women with testosterone levels or all the activity that it's doing in the system, which is really to our own detriment. And luckily that's turning around, but we're starting to see just how important testosterone is to this whole picture as well. And primarily testosterone has been coming from our ovaries, but we also can make some from our adrenals. The DHEA turns into testosterone. We can make it from a few other places, but as that ovarian function turns down, so does the testosterone.
Right. Yeah. So just as important. And gut health also plays a role in the metabolism, right? Is it the metabolism, yeah. The production? What aspect is it that the gut, I know that the gut plays a pretty important role. The endobiome is what I've been hearing mm-hmm. about for estrogen.
Yep. And metabolism. The estrobilome. Yeah.
Oh, estrobilome. That's
estrobilome.
How you say it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Estrobilome. Okay.
So it's estrogen and biome like all mixed together. But yeah, we don't know a lot about this yet. I mean, this is like the emerging fields, but we are realizing that as menopause happens and drop in estrogen and testosterone, the microbiome of a woman's gut changes and looks more like the microbiome of a male. So our hormones have been having an impact on what kind of bacteria we have there. And at the same time, that bacteria is impacting how much estrogen we have in the system because they help with the breakdown and actually production of some of those precursors and metabolites of the estrogen and testosterone as well. So there's this chicken and an egg, like which happens first and how, you know, they're playing off of each other. So we don't know all the implications of that, but we certainly know there is a role for that gut microbiome, but then also the general health of the gut. If you're not absorbing your minerals, if you've got leaky gut, if you don't have a great nutrition status in the first place, you're not getting those minerals in to add to the bone strength and the mineralization that's happening, along with the collagen and the backbone scaffolding of the musculoskeletal system.
Yeah, it's multifaceted, which is why medications for osteoporosis do not work. It's just mm-hmm. one throwing one pill or one Band-Aid solution, trying anyway, on bone loss when the internal triggers for the bone breakdown, for the osteoclasts, that's what we need to work on. That's what we need to get the
Absolutely.
Bone loss. We need to stop and we need to support the bone builders. So supporting hormones is going to support those bone as well.
Yes. And the big things about supporting that the class activity is picking up as there's more free radical damage and there's more inflammatory factors in the body. And so really addressing inflammation through nutrition, through stress management, and things like melatonin that also help reduce that free radical damage, those actually can help reduce that cleanup crew's activities so that we're doing better mineralization, so that we have things that we can do to help support both sides of that system.
Right, because everything is connected and the bones are the bank for the minerals. So whatever's happening in the body, they need to release the minerals to manage different systems. The free radicals, those reactive oxygen species, are some of the substrates created during liver detoxification between the phase one and phase two. So as your body is managing detoxification, managing the food that came in, whatever we is in, on, and around us that came into our system, as it's managing all that, it's going to create byproducts. And exactly. So then your bones need to manage that. So really it is that it's so multi-layered and we are multifaceted. Again, why it's not a one pill or a solution, it's lifestyle, a lifestyle solution. Yeah.
And there's a lot of data coming out as far as melatonin, but also the impact of circadian rhythm on bone health. So too much sleep, people who take really long naps and sleep too much actually have a higher risk of bone loss. And they think that that's partly because you're not literally not using gravity as much, right? You're not up and moving and active. So you're encouraging bone loss. And people who have too little sleep, i.e. then more stress hormones in their system, we see bone loss there as well. So supporting circadian rhythm, good sleep, good stress management is the most important thing in my thinking, and how you can take control of that. That's not a pill. That's not anything. We just have to really think about that circadian rhythm and getting a good amount of sleep, that kind of classic 6 to 8 hours of sleep, not over or under. Sleeping in a dark room, waking up to light, all of those pieces to support that body system, which then supports the rest of the endocrine and hormone system, hugely important.
Yeah, the internal dance of the biochemistry, the orchestra that is inside of us, allowing all the players to do their part. Melatonin, so interesting you just spoke about this, because I was interviewing someone this morning about this. And melatonin is metabolized in the gut.
It is. Right. There's more melatonin in the gut than in the brain and the pineal gland.
And it's two steps, metabolic pathways, I believe, too, after serotonin. So serotonin then metabolizes to become melatonin.
Yes.
Right.
So we have like a serotonin we think of as our happy chemical. And I think of it as there's a very strong mind gut connection. We know serotonin makes us happy up here, but I tell patients it also kind of makes your gut happy. It helps with motility, which melatonin does as well, as a breakdown product of that serotonin. So we have all of these other seemingly unrelated and yet related things that are going on. We got to sleep well and have a good circadian rhythm. We also have got to digest well. And actually I will give people 5-HTP as a serotonin precursor, or even low dose melatonin to support their gastrointestinal system if they have something like IBS.
Okay, that's great. So motility, because motility, if things are not moving and they sit just like a stream, if you have a stream and you have rocks stopping certain areas, you're going to see an accumulation of bubbles, of grime, of twigs and leaves. And it's the same thing in our system. You're going to see the gunk building up. And motility is a big factor behind SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, IBS, IBD. Yeah. So we've got
the longer that stuff is sitting there, the more is getting resorbed back into the bloodstream and going around for another ride. I always think about this is less in menopause, but our younger women, if they're constipated and they've got PMS, you got to fix the constipation, because it's that estrogen getting resorbed back in the system, leaving them in this kind of estrogen dominant PMS inflammatory kind of state. And so that's one just example of how the gut interplays with how we're metabolizing and moving hormones through the system.
Yeah. And, you know, from a bone health perspective, detoxification, hormone imbalance, huge. Mineral imbalance, inflammation, stress, and even what you were talking about, sleeping too much, maybe not using gravity, so sedentary lifestyle, those are all the root causes of bone loss.
Absolutely. And if the body is missing its minerals, it's going to steal them from the bones. That's why I tell people, it's why drinking sodas and cola colored drinks that phosphoric acid, it's going to rip that calcium out of there. If your nutrition is not on point and you don't have enough adequate protein and adequate minerals and vitamins coming in through your nutrition, your body's going to take it from somewhere because it needs it. And it's often going to be your muscles and your bones that are going to pay that price.
And if you're in menopause and aging, any of those of us over 50, it's happening anyway at a greater rate. And
exactly.
Then the lifestyle contributes more. So yeah, we want to stop that loss. Okay. So let's speak about how to naturally support hormones with botanicals mm-hmm. and lifestyle and maybe even bioidentical hormone replacement.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first place I usually start on this topic is with it's already within conventional standard practice of medicine. If a woman goes into early menopause, like 45, or actually really anyone under 50, but certainly the early 40s, it's a problem. They will automatically put them on hormone replacement because that's just too early to lose that stimulation of the bone health, and they're going to have osteoporosis problems later. So the standard of care is to put women on hormone replacement, hopefully bioidentical. I'm a staunch advocate for bioidentical and no synthetics, but you need to. Like, you're actually not doing that woman any favors by not giving her some bioidentical hormone support until she's at least 50 or 51, the average age of menopause. And then she can decide whether or not she wants to continue it or go totally natural and herbal. We have all those options. For those women who get to 50, 51, 52 for their menopause, we do know that estrogen replacement is going to support bones. It's one of the few claims that the FDA will let us make that we can support bone health with your hormone replacement. But it's not always the right solution for everybody, right? Everyone, you know, we have different belief systems, different risk factors from our genetics and from our family histories, personal opinions, all of those things. And so whether or not someone wants to do bioidentical hormones to support their bone health and brain health and all of those things, we can also look to the botanical world and our nutrition to also support those systems. So we know things like soy, for example, it's a phytoestrogen. So that's something that I will have women incorporate into their diets. 1 to 2 servings of soy, when you look at the totality of research, is neutral or beneficial on hormone health for postmenopausal women. So the fear of a soy is going to cause breast cancer, pretty much like null and void at this point. It looks like it's neutral in that it may not have any impact, or it's going to be beneficial. And those are pretty good odds for me. So I figure it's not no harm, no foul to add some edamame and tofu. I am not talking about the fake meats. Those are so processed. We've gone way too, way far away from that soybean for those. But the most natural sources of that, flax meal is a phytoestrogen. So I will often have people increase the amount of lignans, which are rich in flax meal, in their diets. And then we get into the herbs. My favorite one is using Maca Go, which is in the Feminescence product, because we actually see in clinical studies that that particular product has increased estrogen, increased progesterone, decreased cortisol. And on 4 months of use, we've actually seen a significant difference in bone density. Now, that's a short-term study. We obviously need longer-term studies. But when an herb can do that and bump up those hormones naturally out of where you can still make them from your fat stores and adrenal glands, even though the ovaries are retired, that's pretty impressive. And we're not talking that Feminescence isn't going to get it to the level of hormone replacement, but that also makes women feel more comfortable and safe. We're just bumping it up a little bit so we get some of the benefits, but we're staying well away from any of the risks.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to interview you, because of this product, Feminescence, and all the research behind it. So that's that. A couple of things about the food. What about women mm-hmm. who have had hormone-specific breast cancer and eating tofu and or even a product like Maca Go that is mm-hmm. supporting hormones? What's the research there, or the thoughts there?
Well, I wish we had more research. So that is always the caveat I have to hand out to people. If someone is actively in treatment, like they're on letrozole or tamoxifen and actively still suppressing all estrogen production in the body, then they're a no-go. We don't want to increase estrogen in any way, shape, or form in the middle of treatment. Obviously, people need to speak to their own provider and their own practitioner. But I will say that many of us in the community, post that treatment of tamoxifen or letrozole, I am not generally concerned about using something like Maca Go or the soy to help support the system. Because like I said before, I am not seeing hugely increased levels of hormones in the bloodstream when I check their levels. I get this tiny little bump. And that, I think, if we have good detoxification and cleansing out of the system and we're moving and metabolizing those hormones through, I think the benefits probably outweigh any risk that may or may not be there. Although I do have to say, the studies haven't all been done. So we have to be cautious.
Yeah, I was talking to Alan Christensen, Dr. Alan Christensen. He's a naturopathic doctor. And I asked, he did a book on women's hormones. And I asked him a little bit about tofu. And I think just as recent as maybe 2022, he did say there was a lot of studies coming out of Japan that were showing that even women with like hormone specific cancer, that tofu could be beneficial. So yeah, there are newer studies, but I do think that we're going to see, I hate to demonize food. I really don't. I can't stand when we demonize something. And we need our estrogen for so many things. We need it for our bone health. And like you started off this conversation, the major change, maybe even only change, or the biggest change for sure in menopause is the loss of estrogen, which osteoporosis is the number one disease of menopause. And the biggest decrease is when that's happening. So we need to support hormones.
And I mean, generally speaking, if I think about our potency of or our force of intervention, nutrition and diet are a pretty low force intervention, right? They're a whole food. Your body knows what to do with it. It's natural. It knows how to break it down. Teas are a little more concentrated in the botanical medicine world. Capsules are more concentrated. So we have these increasing kinds of therapeutic and or levels. And so if we're talking about nutrition, I'm rarely going to be overly concerned about that. I mean, obviously, if you're celiac, you can't have any gluten, like none. But there are only few places where I think food should be completely demonized and you can never touch that again.
Yeah. Now, in bioidentical hormone, this is always confusing to me. You go to your doctor, you get a prescription. You could get a patch that you're picking up at a pharmacy for estradiol. Is there
Estradiol.
estradiol? Typically, a 0.5 milligrams, what I see most of my clients on. And then progesterone, 100 milligrams or 200 milligrams. Is that bioidentical or is that synthetic?
Yes. So that is the cool thing about bioidentical hormone replacement. There are some affordable insurance covered formulations through the regular pharmaceutical industry that are covered and are bioidentical. So something like estradiol patches, those are bioidentical. Prometrium or generic progesterone, those are bioidentical. And you can also get estrogen orally, but most docs don't use that. And you can also, things like the Vagifem tablet that you use topically for vaginal dryness, also bioidentical. And so and then we can step out into the compounding world and we can get other things that are cleaner, fewer fillers. That is an increasing concern because when you are going through the pharmaceutical side of things, they like their colors and dyes. You have a plastic with an adhesive for the patch. There are things to think about with the delivery method. If we go compounded, we usually have a little cleaner product and a little, we have more control over it. But I always also remind people we have fewer studies on the compounded. And something like progesterone cream, and this is like a personal beef of mine in our health world, progesterone cream has never been shown to adequately protect the uterine lining. So if someone is on estrogen, whether it's a patch, a cream, a pill, they need to be on oral progesterone or a sublingual progesterone because topical doesn't have the same protection.
Right. And the reason, isn't there an absorbability aspect to progesterone? It needs to be absorbed in
There
the
is.
gut.
Yes. Well, I mean, we get more benefit out of the progesterone. If it goes through the liver and through the gut, we get allopregnanolone, which helps women sleep and just it has a calming effect on the body. So there's that aspect. But we also know the blood levels are the most stable if we give it orally and patches, or no, sorry, creams historically. People have varying degrees of absorbability through their skin. And so it's just less predictable.
Right. And at some point, so I went on hormone replacement 2 years postmenopause. I was avoiding it. I'm a functional health coach, supernaturally minded. And it was a PA that was in a Facebook group that one time said, women have a 1% chance of breast cancer without hormone replacement and only a 2% chance with it. And I thought, well, at that point, I was feeling like I could be burned at the stake with my symptoms of menopause. I really did. I thought I would be burned at the stake. And so I'm like, I'm going on it with 1%. I'll take that 1% risk. But I did try at different times creams. And What I found is the cream didn't absorb all the way all the time, and then it could be rubbed off. And so, and then it was like, where do I apply it? Is it on the forearm? And so I think that there's not quite the delivery with the hormone when you take it, when you use creams. Okay. That's great to know. I didn't know if I was on bioidentical because I'm on a hormone patch and I do take oral progesterone and they are what you just mentioned. So I am on bioidentical. Yeah.
So when we're looking at, so the name brands are Primarin and Provera. Those are the synthetic hormones from horse mare urine, and we won't talk about how the horses are treated to get that hormone product. But if it's Primarin or Provera or one of the generics of those, or it's a progestin, those are the things you need to look for in the naming. Progesterone is different than a progestin, and a progestin is the synthetic.
Okay. What about Susie Q, 10 years postmenopause, scared to take bioidenticals? Can she consider going on bioidenticals? Like, what point is it that it's an okay thing to do, or maybe not?
There's controversy around that. If you look at some of the anti-aging and longevity groups, they're a little more aggressive. But if we're looking at NAMS and the Endocrine Society and most of the mainstream groups, it's 10 years within, you can start within 10 years of menopause or by the age of 60. So women who are over 60, we have to just think more about, is there pre-existing cardiovascular disease? What else is going on for them? And oftentimes we'll err on the side of caution and we won't do bioidentical, but we have all these other great things that we can use. So we can use DHEA supplementally to help push some of that testosterone. We can use the Feminescence Maca Go to help push estrogen and progesterone and some of those hormones. And then we have the nutrition aspects as well. So there are other things we can do for those women who it may not be the best choice.
Yeah. And that's the great thing about Feminescence, because there's so much research. And when I spoke with Lisa, and I know Dr. Wendy Warner, gynecologist, it's one of the products that I interviewed her a few times on my podcast. It's what she loves to recommend to women as well. And why not? It's a root. It's a root from Peru. It's a natural substance. And so I love natural, and the women that I work with and women in my community are typically naturally minded.
And it is the only maca product that it has clinical studies on it, because not all maca is created equally. Your listeners probably don't know, most people don't know, most practitioners don't know, that there are 13 different colors of maca. They all have a different biochemical makeup. And so the one that we would use in a younger woman who's having PMS, she has too much estrogen on board. It doesn't make sense to use that same one in someone who's postmenopausal, who we need to boost the estrogen. So that's what the makers of the Feminescence have done, is look at the activities of these different colors and formulate it to the action that we're wanting to see in the body, which I think is why it's so effective. Super concentrated, you know, it's not just a maca powder you throw in a smoothie. Like, it's potent.
Yeah, that's important, because I know my conversation with Lisa, the different phenotypes and the level of studies that this company has done to and the science behind it, and then also the ethical aspects of the way it's produced and going into Peru, and the attention to the communities where the product is produced. I was so impressed with, you know, using it for myself, but also for supporting not just choosing a natural product, but a natural product that's so effective, and then this aspect of helping the world. So going into Peru and taking care of the communities where the products are actually produced or manufactured, and then maybe even some of the places here too in the States.
Yeah, we call it seed to shelf. The company has full control from seed all the way to the shelf. We work with the farmers. So it's even better than fair trade. We're working to build those communities. And in doing that, we're also making sure we're growing it at the right elevation to get the right concentration of the nutrients we're looking for. We're in control of the drying process and gelatinization to remove the starches, so it doesn't affect our SIBO and FODMAP patients, because it's a root vegetable. So there's a lot of starches in it, but we remove most of those, or 99% of them, so more than most. And then we have this, you know, fair trade and moving all the way through where we're in charge of the encapsulation, the packaging, all of those pieces. So there are many fewer chances for any adulteration along the way.
Okay. So is it high in inulin?
It doesn't have a lot of inulin.
Okay. That's important what you were saying there, because some of these prebiotic type fibers that are great and feed good gut microbes. If you have overgrowth of opportunistic species, you're feeding the animals. I say don't feed the animals. So we want a product, the fact that that's even a consideration in this product is really important also, because a lot of the women I work with have gut issues. I'm imagining a lot of the people that you work with have gut issues.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Gut is one of the first things we usually need to fix in most patients so that we're getting good metabolism. The other great thing is, yes, all those starches are removed, so my SIBO patients can use it. But the other thing about maca, besides its hormone supportive side, it's also very, very high in glucosinolates. And so glucosinolates like broccoli seed extract or DIM or indole-3-carbinol that some of your listeners may be familiar with, glucosinolates help clear estrogen and metabolize hormones out of the system. So we're helping build and we're making sure we're breaking down properly and getting them out of the system. So we're not ending up with a buildup of any one particular thing. So I also use this a lot with my women who are on bioidentical hormones. You can use them together and we can oftentimes minimize the dose of the HRT. And I can make sure I'm supporting all that metabolism. So we're mitigating as many risks as possible by making sure you are fully utilizing the hormones and also clearing them out of the system.
Okay. Do you use the Dutch test for your hormone testing?
I do that occasionally, but I'm a very insurance-based practice. So okay. I do a lot of just serum testing because it gets covered.
Okay.
But if I want to look at if I wanted to look at metabolism, then yes, absolutely the Dutch test is the way to go.
Yeah, I run that Dutch test. You see all those metabolic pathways, you see what you're supporting, what you need to support, what the levels are, the cortisol. So yeah, that's great.
Yep.
Yeah, this is really informative. You know, we hear things out there, but it needs to be more clear and really put in laywoman's terms for us. And that's what I hope to do. That's part of why I do this podcast is to try to put this in. I'm very visual and I try to get these questions that I have myself, but that I also get asked by ladies. And today in one of my yoga classes that I was teaching, and I mentioned I was going to be interviewing you, two of the women had breast cancer. So the whole question around supporting hormones, had breast cancer, no longer on active treatment. But those ladies are looking for things, and even women that have not had breast cancer. But the other thing that we haven't really touched on, because we do talk about bones and we're going to go next into bone quality, is, and you mentioned this before I even recorded our session, is the brain protective aspect as well that we need to focus on. Right. And so,
supporting our hormones, we know women who are supporting their hormones postmenopausally, the sooner they're doing that support, the lower rates of dementia. Potentially. I mean, this is still some preliminary research, but it's looking pretty positive. And so there's an element of many women just like think they're going to suffer on through. And A, you don't need to. There are things to do, whether they're botanical or hormone replacement. But even if, you know, symptoms are not terrible, hot flashes are not terrible, if we can support estrogen production in the system, whether naturally or with HRT, we're likely having other benefits across the body besides just bone health. There's cardiovascular system, the flexibility of those vessels, because we're going to talk about this, but estrogen is also big with the collagen in our system. And as the estrogen disappears, collagen breaks down, which is why we're getting the wrinkles, the dry skin. And that also means that our blood vessels are less flexible. So blood pressure likes to go up, cholesterol likes to go up, and we have this breakdown of collagen and the flexibility of our bones also. So it's doing all of these things across the body.
Okay, that all sounds terrible and dire, and it is. I mean, honestly, I love getting older. Like, I'm 57 right now. I love being older because of the wisdom that I've acquired in my life. But yes, there's the dehydration, the dry skin, the things, the wrinkles and all that. Yes. But it's like you have to accept that.
Well, and it was funny. Well, I just talked to a woman this morning who she was grieving, like she's having such a hard time going through menopause. And she's like, this is terrible. I'm getting old. I can't do the things I used to do. And all these things. I'm like, wait, we need to stop. Let's think about other cultures. In menopause, it's just the next phase of life. We become the wise woman, the elder of the community. We don't care as much what people think about us. So we get things done. Like, there are good things in there too, even though the transition can be rough. And yes, there's things we need to think about to protect our health as we move forward.
Yeah, I love it. I feel stronger than ever. I do, you know, I teach yoga. I'm a yoga therapist. I have a hip replacement that I had at 51. I'm on my BHRT now that I know for sure it's bioidentical. I'm taking my feminescence. I'm doing my lifestyle to support it. I love it. I love where I'm at. Yeah. And it's the best version of myself that I can be. So let's talk about our bones. Let's talk about the importance of the matrix, the micro architecture in maintaining bone health.
So we're seeing historically, we've all just thought about bone density. Can we get more mineralization? Like, how strong can we make these bones? And more in more recent research, we're seeing a lot more about the micro architecture. And I like to tell people it's like the scaffolding. So if you have scaffolding, you have all that scaffolding as you're building a building, and then you stick the minerals on for that extra support. The way I want people to think about this is we need strong bones, but we also need flexible bones, which is not intuitive. We think of bones, they're hard, but they're actually living tissues. And if you think about a branch or a twig, and which one is stronger, which one doesn't break as easily? The dry one that's dead is going to snap right in half. But the fresh one that still has water in it and is fresh off the tree, you can bend and bend and bend. You have twist and twist. It takes a lot of effort to break that branch. That's what we're thinking about with the bones. And so it is about bone strength, but it's also about flexibility and the tensile strength that we have within that bone architecture.
Yes, we need to be bendable and not breakable. And I love your twig. I talk about beef jerky versus a juicy steak, that beef jerky frays when you bend it, and a steak will yield to bending. And dehydration and oxidation are two of the main things that are happening during the aging process. So the micro architecture of the bone, how do we keep ourselves as that young, fresh branch?
So hydration is absolutely key. I mean, you talk to anyone, even if you're just thinking about aesthetically, right? Even if we just want to keep it super surface, hydration is going to help with reducing wrinkles and keeping all these tissues, you know, lush and supple. And same thing with vaginal tissue, but it's doing the same in your bones as well. So hydration, number one. And then I also think about adequate protein. Protein is where we're going to get some of those backbones for the collagen production. So many women will just add in some collagen, which there's some great ones around. You don't need to spend a bazillion dollars. There are very nice collagens that don't cost a ton of money, and they mix into coffee or whatever. And so you can take that collagen, but really it's about adequate protein in your diet as well. And then also the exercise, right? You need to be bendable. And so if you're not doing any yoga, you're not doing any stretching, you know, if you don't move your body in three dimensions, I always talk to women about, I love the gym, fine, you can do bicep curls. But bicep curls are in kind of, they're in one, they're in a static motion. That's not how we move our bodies in real life. So I think more about HIIT workouts and things where you're doing squats and lunges and you're moving your body in space and working your balance and your coordination. And that's going to also lead to those more flexible bones.
Yeah, loading, unloading, different positions, pulling and pushing on your bones from many different angles. And that's why I think yoga is like superior. I teach yoga therapy for osteoporosis.
You're not biased.
I'm not biased, but it's true. I mean, we need to pull and push on them from many different angles, keep them flexible. In terms of hydration, beyond drinking water, are there other tips you have for maintaining hydration?
Yeah, I always tell people, because not everyone loves the taste of water, if you want to throw a few fruit slices in there, that's fine, or cucumbers or whatever. But I also count herbal tea, non-caffeinated herbal tea, as hydration. And teas are plants, and they have antioxidants, and they have all these colors and things in them, which are good for our system. So I'm fine if women want to drink hot or iced herbal tea all day, along with some water. I don't mind a few soda waters in there, just can't live on a six pack of soda water all day. And then I think about if someone really is needing that hydration, I do like electrolytes. Some are better than others. I don't like the fake sweeteners. Some of them have things in that will, like xylitol and stuff, that will totally affect someone if they have SIBO. So you got to watch some of those sweeteners. But something like a noon tablet, which is pretty darn clean. It's like an Alka-Seltzer tablet, comes in a bunch of flavors. You can throw it in. Or if someone really wants to get on the train, there's something called Soleil, where you get true, real Himalayan salt, pink salt, because there's a lot of fakes out there. But Himalayan pink salt, you soak the stones in water, and then you use a spoon and you take 1 teaspoon, 2 teaspoons of that salt water and put it in a glass of water and drink that. You're getting a ton of electrolytes. There's like 84 different minerals in there. It's not a high sodium product. It is a salt, but it's not like white table salt. So I'm not worried about the sodium, but it's like one of the best ways to hydrate the system and provide a bunch of minerals without taking another capsule and another pill.
Yeah, that gets to be challenging because women, there's like a strong like relationship I find between fat metabolism, thyroid health, and bone metabolism. And so whenever mm-hmm. there's heart stuff going on, women are moving away from salt or sodium.
And it's the sodium, yeah. But with this, I again, you need to check your blood pressures and talk to your doctor. But I will use this with my patients with higher blood pressure. It does not seem to affect it. And I think it's because all those other minerals are very, very helpful to the whole system. And the sodium, if you're watching how much table salt you're adding to the diet, this little bit of sodium is not the problem.
Right. Yeah. Okay. We just covered so much. Hormones, supporting hormones, naturally doing this, the importance of that support, what's happening with the bone builders, the bone dissolvers, or the cleanup crew, how so many of our lifestyle behaviors, and then that the hormones playing the role in supporting bone growth, turning on the switches for bone building, mm-hmm. and then the interplay that takes place in the body between that all. And then I just want to do another shout out or speak again about the feminescence. And actually, I do have it here. Because I do take this. And this is like, I don't know if you can totally see it, and it'll be in the show notes for here as well. But, you know, I feel so good about taking a natural route and not just any maca, because you did say don't just throw things. I have bags of maca that I've used to put in smoothies before. But I love the research that's behind this. And I think it makes sense, a lot of sense. It's all about what makes sense to us. Like for me, you know, that I'm like, does this make sense? Like really, could spinach be that bad that we shouldn't ever eat spinach when people are demonizing foods?
Yeah, no, I mean, don't eat it four times a day. Like there's nothing, if spinach is in, we want lots of the rainbow. So eating things here and there, lots of variety is the key to life. So lots of herbs and spices, those all count as color in the diet. And then also your fruits and vegetables, where we can get a lot of antioxidants and support through our nutrition. And we don't have to never eat the broccoli if we have a thyroid problem, or never eat spinach. It's just, you can't live on just that one thing.
Right. Right. And it needs to be balanced and eaten in combination with other things. Cause mm-hmm. I always say, if you were growing your own spinach, would you grow enough spinach to have that many cups a day? And would you be growing spinach in December and eating it in December and January? Right. Cause then the seasonal aspect of food needs to come in mm-hmm. but you know, cooking for ourselves and food seems to be such a challenge for so many. They want it to be here. Tell me what to eat and do this, this, and this. But we always need to shift, but really it's because there's value, because food is medicine and food is poison. Yes. So it can be both of those, and we can heal ourselves with medicine, with natural approaches. Well, thank you so much. Any last things that you'd like to say or share, any links or information or anything you'd like to share with our audience?
No, I would say, I mean, think about the basics. A lot of this stuff, it can get overwhelming really quickly, but sleep, that circadian rhythm, hydration, adequate protein, and then supporting estrogen and progesterone and testosterone in whatever manner fits your lifestyle, that's what we need to do to keep things healthy and move things forward. You don't always need to overcomplicate it.
Yeah. And this is what I specialize in. So I see women reversing bone loss, reversing osteoporosis, depending on where they are on that spectrum. Mm-hmm. And there's so much we can do. For me, it's like, let's take control. Whether it's a DEXA scan and osteoporosis, or even if you're not even at that place yet, but you've got estrogen issues or hormone issues or whatever, there's so much we can do about our health. We need to learn and take care of it. And there's so much we can do naturally.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you so much. This has been really informative. I can't wait to hear what people I teach 5 classes a week. I see about 100 people a week at least. And then all the private work I do, and they're like, that episode was this, that, the other. So I just can't wait to hear about all the questions.
I look forward to it. And I really appreciated being here. And I love that everyone's so flexible these days, and the fact that I'm getting well from an illness right now, and I'm broadcasting from my bedroom. I love that we can do that now.
Yes, you're sharing your wisdom from your bedroom.
Yeah.
Bedroom discussions.
Yeah. It's all about the circadian rhythm.
There you go. That's the plug. This was intentional.
There we go. This is intentional. We totally meant to do this.
Yeah, people don't realize that, but that is, I definitely should have a podcast on circadian rhythm and that biochemical balance. And because I talk about As a yoga therapist, I teach people how to balance on one leg because we need balance for fall prevention or to be better fallers, to be safer fallers. But we also need internal balance for bone health, for all health, internal balance.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you. And I hope that to have you on again, maybe some other discussions.
Thank you. I would love to.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. Bone loss is not an inevitable part of aging. We don't have to just wait for it to happen. There is so much that you can do. And that is what you will learn each week on the show. Go to my website, debbierobinson.com, if you want more information about what was shared in today's episode. At the bottom of this episode in the show notes, there will be links to whatever was shared. Please subscribe to this podcast. Share this podcast with your friends, your family, or any women that you think may be interested or benefit from the information we're sharing. Please rate the podcast. And if you have any questions you'd like asked or answered, I would love to hear from you. Let's do this, ladies. Let's change the way the world views osteoporosis and slow down, stop, or reverse our bone loss, take charge, and show other ladies what is possible. Thank you so much for joining me.